Thank you, Margot, for that very kind introduction. I wonder how many of you have not yet been to Hong Kong. I just met two. More than that. Not been to Hong Kong. Well, you better come soon. Now I can go back home and tell my people I have been selling Hong Kong. Well, Hong Kong, of course, is the success story. Against all odds, if you like. Or maybe not. Maybe there are many reasons why Hong Kong is the success story. But then people always say it is a mystery. Now, as a Christian, I believe in mysteries, but certainly not Hong Kong, because you can't have a mystery every day, or a miracle rather. You can't have a miracle every day in Hong Kong. I suggest our success is built on a number of things. Of course, free market economy, right at the tip of China, that helps. Because if the whole of China is also free market economy, then maybe we lose part of our attractiveness. Very hard-working people. The, of course, entrepreneurial spirit of the Hong Kong people is perhaps unmatched. A very free press, minimal government intervention, low tax system, simple tax system. I can do my tax on one sheet of paper. I should have said my wife does it. Above all, the rule of law. That's why we are a success. China is about to take over Hong Kong, and 6 million people in 420 odd days' time, and the whole world is watching to see what happens. I'm told there will be at least 6,000 journalists and television crew members in Hong Kong. So those of you who have not been there, you better book early. We were promised in 1984, when the British and Chinese government struck agreement over Hong Kong in what is called the Sino-British Joint Declaration, that effectively all these good things will remain unchanged. We were told 50 years, no change. I'm sure the ladies would love it. 50 years, no change. But above all, we were given quite a number of specific guarantees contained in that joint declaration. We were told that Hong Kong will remain the international financial center that it is, separate system from China, one country, two systems. That Hong Kong people will continue to be free as before, that their human rights will continue to be governed by the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, that the rule of law will continue, that we will be able to elect our chief executive and our legislators. But of course, in 1984, the governor was appointed by the Queen, and every legislator in Hong Kong was appointed by that governor. But all that has to change. So I was very happy when I read that document the first time in the afternoon of the 26th of September 1984. I believe that we could make it, difficult though it may be. But now, what do we see? We see China wanting to control Hong Kong in every conceivable way, which is totally contrary to what we were promised in 1984, that Hong Kong people will be ruling Hong Kong with a high degree of autonomy. That showed the vision of the paramount leader of China, Deng Xiaoping, because he saw that it is not easy for one country, two systems to work, because China is so much mightier, with 1.2 billion people, and we only have 6 million. Therefore, we were promised that Beijing would not interfere. Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, as we know best. But now, the Chinese leaders are keen, only too keen, to control Hong Kong. How? First, the executive will be controlled by Beijing, because the chief executive, instead of being elected democratically by the people of Hong Kong, will be chosen by a Beijing-appointed body. So in effect, whatever Beijing wants to be the chief executive will be appointed as the chief executive. All civil servants, the senior ones, will be screened by Beijing. So the entire executive will be in the control of Beijing. What about the legislature? The Joint Declaration in 1984 promised that the legislature shall be constituted by elections. But now, Beijing has decided that the legislature, which was only elected for a four-year term last September to August 1999, will come to an end on the 1st of July 1997 and be replaced by a Beijing-appointed legislature. The consequences are clear. That legislature, being appointed by Beijing, will pass any law that Beijing wants it to pass. For example, Beijing has already decided that many of our laws will be amended. Example, the Bill of Rights Ordinance, which embodies all the freedoms which are enshrined in the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights I just mentioned. Freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, all these basic freedoms were enshrined and embodied in that Bill of Rights Ordinance. That ordinance gives to the courts a very useful power, which is whenever the courts at any level take the view that a particular provision of our law is inconsistent with the Bill of Rights Ordinance, then the court may simply strike down that law and uphold the Bill of Rights Ordinance. Beijing says that power shall be removed from the court, and that provision of the Bill of Rights Ordinance shall be repealed. Further, there are a number of laws in Hong Kong which were passed many, many years ago when Hong Kong first became a British colony. The governor in those days, of course, had to be given a lot of powers, now considered to be draconian powers, because the governor was then ruling this place 8,000 miles away from the United Kingdom. And there were no planes. Everything has to be brought to Hong Kong by ship. But those draconian powers were hardly ever used by the British administration in recent years. With the passage of the Bill of Rights Ordinance in 1991, those powers are really too old, and besides, they were clearly inconsistent with the Bill of Rights Ordinance. So the legislature studied them and had the draconian powers taken away from the government. For example, formally, the governor has the power to order television programs to be screened beforehand, before publication. Likewise, newspapers. That power was not used in recent years at all. That power we removed from the ordinance. Beijing wants all these ordinances reinstated into their original form. In other words, the appointed legislature is already told to give back to the government these very excessive powers which the present British administration has not used for many years. That legislature, therefore, cannot be relied upon at all to protect human rights. But it is obvious to all that that appointed legislature will be relied upon by Beijing to pass repressive laws to enable the future government in Hong Kong to suppress human rights. Beijing therefore controls the legislature as well as the executive. Were I to stop there, there is little doubt already that the rule of law cannot survive, because the state will enjoy a lot of draconian powers to suppress human rights. And what can the best judge and the most righteous judge do to protect human rights when the law infringes them? The court, of course, have to apply the law as they find them. But that is not the end. Judges have been recently told that they would not necessarily keep their same job after the changeover of sovereignty in 1997. In other words, a High Court judge today may be demoted tomorrow if he gives a judgment which Beijing frowns upon. He may be demoted to even a magistrate's court to try traffic summonses. That threat would clearly destroy judicial independence and with it the rule of law. What do the business sector in Hong Kong think about it? Because it clearly affects them, the rule of law, or the loss thereof. And what is more, I'm sure many of you have already read about the recent decision in Beijing to control the supply of economic information. So the environment in Hong Kong will no longer be beneficial to investments, I'm afraid. And Hong Kong, which was recently voted as the freest society in the world, faces a lot of problems indeed in the very near future. That, of course, is a very imminent threat, because all these decisions are already made by Beijing. And they have, of course, the ability to carry them out, because they have an appointed legislature soon to be constituted. We are told that this appointed legislature will be constituted at the latest in January next year. So, by January next year, in Hong Kong, there will be two legislatures functioning at the same time. The lawful and elected legislature, of which I'm a member, with 18 other members of my party. The other legislature, which will be appointed by Beijing, and which is in breach of the Joint Declaration, and China's own basic law, which is a constitution for Hong Kong, setting out the relationship between central and local governments. Because that basic law requires every legislator to be elected. Those of you who are in the law will shiver to think what would become of Hong Kong when there are two legislatures functioning at the same time. I'm not talking about a bicameral system as you have, which already gives enough trouble. There'll be two independent legislatures operating together. Imagine the poor civil servants. Which legislature would they serve? Particularly when the decisions would be totally different. Because my party members and our allies number 31 out of a legislature of 60. So we would have the majority on most important matters, on human rights, on the rule of law, on democracy. And the other one, of course, is appointed by Beijing and will just carry out Beijing's orders. So how can civil servants carry out their duties anymore? Well, I have summarized for you a very bleak prospect for our future. But let me assure you that I'm confident that this cannot last forever. For one thing, I'm much younger than Deng Xiaoping. But the sad thing is, he decides when he will go to heaven. Now, why is China taking this attitude, you may ask me? Why did China play with those war games over Taiwan so recently? The answer is simple. The leaders of China feel insecure about their own position, not knowing what they would be when Deng Xiaoping finally decides that he will go to heaven. And when the Beijing leaders feel insecure, the golden rule is to take the hardest possible line, because by that they could at least get the party members together and let them feel that they've got a strong leadership. And so they will tighten up control over the whole country. They will adopt hardline policies towards Taiwan, Hong Kong, and indeed in her foreign relations with other governments, including yours. Unfortunately, this is what I call the end of dynasty syndrome may last for a little while. Dynasty being the Deng dynasty. And unfortunately, it is being matched with the end of sovereignty syndrome in Hong Kong, because the British are pulling out. So the inclination is to do as little as possible, to give themselves as little headache as possible. And besides, there is the vast China market. And that explains a lot of our problems. Because it doesn't apply only to the British government, which is more intent in getting a larger slice of this huge China market pie than taking the rights, the human rights of the Hong Kong citizens very seriously. I'm afraid the same applies to your government, to any government. What is so important about 6 million people living so many thousand miles away So all these are problems. But we will continue to fight in Hong Kong. The odds may seem formidable, but the fortunate thing perhaps for us, and this is the ray of hope, is that we are actually on a winner. Because how can any government stand in the tide of democracy, of human rights, of the rule of law for long? China has already allowed the economic half of the genie out of the bottle. How long can the Chinese leaders suppress the political half of the same genie in the bottle? So I believe we're going to win. Not perhaps in the near future, not perhaps in my lifetime, but so long as I do not give up, I'm not going to lose. So I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, terrible things may happen to Hong Kong after 420 odd days, but it will not last forever. Victory will be ours. Thank you very much.